Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Tuesday, November 4, Election Day. And starting tonight at 8 p.m., WPR's state government reporter Sean Johnson and Wisconsin Public Television's Frederica Freiberg will co-host election night coverage. So tune in tonight for the latest election results as they roll in and get up-to-the-minute analysis on the races shaping the 2014 midterm elections. We will not be doing election-related shows today because it is voting day, but tomorrow we will have thorough analysis on the network of all that has happened today. Joy Cardine tomorrow will have a full recap of the midterm election on her show from 6 to 8 in the morning. And we will be devoting the first hour of our program tomorrow to an analysis of the elections with Craig Gilbert from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, Joan Walsh, editor-at-large for Salon, and John McCormick, senior writer for the Weekly Standard. So all of that is coming up the day after elections. This hour, the Affordable Care Act. Margot Sanger Katz co-authored a very interesting New York Times piece last week, A Formula to Find the Uninsured Around the Country. She writes about 10 million more people have insurance coverage this year as a result of the Affordable Care Act. Until now, it's been difficult to say much about who is getting that coverage, where they live, their age, their income, and other details. But Enroll America has been digging out those numbers, finding the uninsured around the country, and their job is to persuade them to sign up for health insurance. So we're going to talk about the numbers, this large set of data from Enroll America, and who it is who's signing up for insurance, and welcoming your phone calls as well. Our phone number to be on the air this hour is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show, and we're also on Twitter at K Dunn Show. Margot, hello. Thank you very much for being with us. Hello. She should be here. Hello, Margot? Hello. Well, we don't quite have her yet. We'll get her in just one moment. Hour two of our program today will be looking at what's going on the border. Two human rights activists who have been working on the border will be with us. They are coming to Edgewood College tomorrow night, so we'll talk about the Minutemen who are there and their work trying to help immigrants to this country. So that's coming up hour two. Margot, hello. There we go. Hi, Margot. Thanks very much for being with us.
Oh, my pleasure. I'm glad to be here.
So let's look at the overall number. You write about 10 million more people have insurance coverage this year.
Yeah, that comes from this Enroll America data set that you mentioned, but it's also consistent with what we've seen from a number of public polls from other organizations. So there's kind of a range of estimates, but they're all right around the 10 million mark.
Mm-hmm. And Enroll America, I didn't even know this organization was doing the work that they are. The big job to find the uninsured. How in the world do you find the uninsured around America?
Yeah, so what they did is very interesting. They basically went out and did a very large survey. They surveyed 12,000 Americans from every state in the country, and they asked them, you know, do you have health insurance, first of all? But then they also asked them a lot of other questions about their age and their work history and other things like that. And then they took that information and they also went out and found a bunch of commercially available information about those people and demographic information about where they lived, who their neighbors were, and that sort of thing. What they were able to do is sort of crunch all that information, pick the variables that turned out to be the most predictive, and they're able to give every American in the country a score. So they could, you know, ask you a couple of questions about yourself and say, okay, you're a person who is, you know, 75% likely to have health insurance. And by doing that, they were able to find the kinds of people around the country who didn't have health insurance, but also, more importantly for their work, the places in the country where there were a lot of people who lacked health insurance, because mm-hmm. what they wanted to do was be able to go out and find those people and tell them about new options and try to encourage them to sign up.
So the goal of the organization is to get people to sign up for the Affordable Care Act?
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. You said, and this is a pretty interesting statement here, the law, you say, has done something rather unusual in the American economy this century. It has pushed back against inequality, essentially redistributing income. What do you mean by that?
Well, if you think about, you know, what's been happening, the larger economic trends of these last few years, it's clear that people in the middle class and people especially sort of lower on the income scale have seen larger gains and have suffered a lot through this economic recovery. They haven't been able to get new jobs as much as they would like. They haven't seen pay raises. But what we see with the Affordable Care Act is that the people who are getting health insurance are those very people who are the most disadvantaged in our economy. So our analysis found, first of all, and kind of most simply, that people who had low incomes were more likely to get health insurance. But we also found that Blacks and Hispanics were more likely to get health insurance than whites, that young adults were more likely to get health insurance than older people, that women were more likely to get health insurance than men, and that people living in rural parts of the country were more likely to get health insurance than people who were living in metropolitan areas.
It's interesting you found, because the wisdom about this act was that it was going to go in the opposite direction. Young adults showing the largest reductions in being uninsured of any age group, and that's not counting the 3 million young people who received coverage on their parents' policies before 2014. The idea, I think, was that it would be unfair to the young because it would limit the ability of insurance companies to charge higher rates to older customers who tend to be sicker.
Yeah, so one of the things that the Affordable Care Act does is it says in these new state marketplaces that if you're an insurance company, you can only vary the amount that you charge people by a small margin. So you can't charge, you know, generally older people tend to be sicker and use more health care. And so the way that it worked in a lot of states before was that old people paid, you know, 5 times, 10 times as much as young people for health insurance. And what the Affordable Care Act said is you can only charge an older person 3 times as much as you can charge a younger person. And so the result of that is that some young people who were getting a really good deal before now have to pay higher premiums, and there was a worry that it was going to make it unattractive for young people. But what Enroll America found was, in fact, that young people were, in many ways, the biggest beneficiaries of the Affordable Care Act. And partially that reflects what their incomes were. So a lot of young people earned very low incomes, and so they qualified for Medicaid. And others had low income, and they were buying health insurance products in the marketplaces. But because their incomes were low, they were eligible for large subsidies. And so that made it affordable, even if their premiums might have been comparatively a little bit higher.
Mm-hmm. And what's happening with people in rural areas? And these are not necessarily Democratic strongholds. They're, would you say, more Republican than Democratic rural areas? They're seeing a lot of people signing up for Affordable Care Act?
So we actually looked specifically at the politics of the places, and what we found is that in the counties that had the strongest Republican share, where the largest number of people voted for Mitt Romney in the presidential election in 2012, those places had much larger gains in the number of people who got insurance this year compared to the places that were the most Democratic voting in the 2012 presidential election.
Hmm.
So it's clear that the Affordable Care Act has made a big impact in some very red parts of the country.
Why is that?
Well, the reason that we think is because a lot of the places that vote most heavily Republican tend to be places that are poor and where people do not have a lot of health insurance. We know that a lot of states, especially in the South, where there are a lot of people without insurance, it's because their existing Medicaid programs didn't really cover very many people, and there just tended to be a higher rate of uninsurance before. So those are the kind of people that stood to take advantage of these new opportunities.
Mm-hmm. And why have you seen, as you call them, the biggest winners among Blacks, Hispanics? Why that demographic?
So there are a couple of theories about that. I mean, one is sort of a similar theory that they tended to be poorer, and that meant that they were eligible for new options, that they probably were less likely to be able to get health insurance through a job than the white population, and now they could get Medicaid in a state that expanded Medicaid, or they could buy a plan on the health insurance exchange with the help of a federal tax credit. I think also there, you know, was some particular outreach to those groups. I know the Hispanic population in particular, and particularly the Hispanic population in California, there were a lot of efforts to try to get those people signed up, and it seems like there's been some success.
Mm-hmm. And what about the efforts? How have those efforts taken place? We're talking about Enroll America, but there were, for some period of time, television commercials, weren't there, among some athletes who were urging young people to sign up? Were there broadcast messages all over the country?
So there were all different kinds of efforts that happened, and they happened in lots of different ways. So Enroll America was a large group. They focused their efforts in 11 states, but there were lots of local organizations and states that were doing things, and everything from advertising on television to sending people door to door to, you know, knock on people's door and try to sign them up, like, you know, sort of like voter canvassing. There were kind of these, what they call these like targeted advertisements, where it would be a digital advertisement, but it would only go to a very particular demographic of people that they knew about. There was also kind of like traditional community organizing kind of work, you know, going out and talking to members of the clergy, talking to barbershop owners, and, you know, running posters in local neighborhood hangouts. There were a lot of different kinds of efforts that were being undertaken. And, of course, hospitals and other healthcare providers were very interested in making sure that their customers who maybe weren't able to pay their bills when they were uninsured would now be able to get insurance. And so we saw in a lot of markets, hospitals, community health centers, and doctor's offices signing people up, too.
Mm-hmm. Do we know what the goals are for next year? 10 million the past year. What is the next year's goal?
It's a little bit hard to know. The Obama administration has basically said that they will not say what their goal is. They said they don't really have an internal goal. They're just hoping for another good year. The Congressional Budget Office, which has built a kind of long-term forecast of what the Affordable Care Act is likely to mean for the insurance market, they are saying that about approximately another 7 million people are going to sign up in the second year. But I think it's a little bit hard to know. Clearly, the goal is that 10 million is the beginning and not the end of what the Affordable Care Act is intended to do in terms of reducing the uninsured. But it's going to be a multi-step process, and it'll take a couple of years to get to the full enrollment numbers that people are hoping for.
Mm-hmm. And do we know, Margot, how many now uninsured there are in this country?
So we know there are approximately probably between 30 and 35 million. The census did a very detailed count for 2013 before all these people that we're talking about got covered, and there were 42 million people without insurance in 2013. Then we know approximately 10 million people got insured this year, and there's probably been some population growth that may have some effect. But I would say somewhere in the neighborhood of 32 million people.
And the goal of the Affordable Care Act is to have how many uninsured?
The goal of the Affordable Care Act is to reduce the overall number of people without insurance. The Congressional Budget Office estimates somewhere around 26 million to 30 million more people will get insurance, but they also estimate that there will be, you know, I think 20 or 30 million who will still remain without insurance. And partially that is because there are some groups that are not eligible for new coverage. So illegal immigrants, for example, are not eligible for any kind of coverage under the Affordable Care Act. It's also because they expect that some people just will choose not to sign up because they don't think it's a good deal or because they just don't want to have health insurance. And, you know, there just are some people that maybe are not going to hear about it. It's going to take some time.
We welcome phone calls from Margot, and let me give you the number and tell you more about her. Again, Margot Sanger-Katz is a writer for the New York Times website, The Upshot, and wrote some interesting pieces last week looking at the Affordable Care Act. This group, Enroll America, we'll hear more about them during the second part of the hour because one of the people who's with Enroll America will talk to us about the work that they've done in states around the country, targeted states, 11 states, to find out who is uninsured, to enroll people in the Affordable Care Act, but also to get a sense of who has enrolled in those areas and who has benefited the most from the Affordable Care Act. We welcome phone calls from you. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. Margot is the healthcare correspondent for The Upshot, which is a New York Times website with analysis about politics, policy, and everyday life. Later in the hour, the Enroll America Michigan State Director will be with us to talk about the Get Covered America campaign. Our number, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. The email is talk at WPR.org. Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show. We're on Twitter as well, at KDunnShow, and we'll be with you in just a moment on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. All right, let's go to phone calls, 800-486-8655. The number, Mike in South Milwaukee is our first caller. Hello, Mike.
Hi, good afternoon.
Hi.
I'm a teacher, and I really issue with a lot of this. You know, I think the act should be called the Unaffordable Care Act, and I'll tell you why. First of all, we have 25 to 30 million people in this country who are still not insured. Granted, people who weren't insured now have insurance. However, once they get sick, and I mean really sick, it is not affordable because they have very high deductibles. This is an illusion, and I'm really upset because when ambulance is going by, people, when they really get sick, under this act, if they develop cancer, if they're a young person, if they develop cancer, they have co-pays $5,000, $10,000, $15,000, $20,000. That's the reality. I'm out in the field. I see it. That's my comment.
All right. Thanks for the call. Margo.
So the Affordable Care Act does impose some caps on how much people can be expected to pay out of pocket for plans, at least, that are purchased in these new state marketplaces. So $15,000, $20,000, that sounds too high. I'm trying to remember what the exact cap is, but it's somewhere, I think, in the neighborhood of $9,000 or $10,000. But it is true that a lot of these new products that are available in the marketplaces do come with relatively high deductibles and cost sharing. And it is, you know, that does mean that if you buy one of these plans and you get really sick, you are exposed to large medical bills. If you are careful when you shop, you will see that there are a bunch of different options and you can choose the plan that is right for you. So you kind of have to make a trade-off between, do I want to pay more money in premium and know that if something bad happened, I won't have to pay very much out of pocket, or do I prefer to pay smaller premium and potentially have a larger bill if something really bad happens? And I think that's a very individual choice. And I think it's a difficult choice, especially for people who may be struggling to pay for their premiums. They may really want to go for the least expensive plan and just hope for the best.
Mm-hmm. And you have to look at the other part of this. If you're not insured and you should contract cancer and huge medical bills, then you have to foot the bill yourself.
Certainly, but I do think it's a valid point to make, which is that, you know, if you are buying insurance and you're spending a lot of money that may be coming out of a very tight budget so that you have some financial protection, and then you find that you still can't afford to take care of yourself when you get sick, that's a problem. And I think that that is the kind of issue that we really do need to watch, you know, as the Affordable Care Act becomes more of the, you know, becomes more established and more people have these plans. I think it's important to keep our eye on this question of whether or not the coverage really is affordable for people and whether it's giving them the kind of financial protection that it's intended to.
We have such a difficult time with this issue in this country, Margo, don't we? It is just a difficult issue.
It certainly is. And, you know, it's very politically controversial.
I think
that makes it hard, you know, now that we have this law that's been passed and that has been implemented to the degree that people want to have these debates about how can we make it a little bit better? How can we fix these problems, maybe make some of these deductibles lower, things like this? Very hard to have public policy conversations about that because people are so polarized about the whole law that the conversation tends instead to be, well, let's just get rid of the whole thing or let's just protect the whole thing exactly the way that it was.
Mike, thanks very much for your call. Scott in Milwaukee. Hi, Scott.
Hi, good afternoon. Yeah, I just have two questions. One is regarding you penalize if you don't have health insurance, if you don't sign up. If I remember, that was the premise that, you know, if you weren't signed up or you don't have health insurance, you were going to be penalized. And I wondered how they would do that, how that would happen. And the second question regarding the credits or the subsidies from the government. So how do they check every year to make sure that somebody's getting all these subsidies due to low income? Maybe now they found a better job and their income is a great deal more. Is there a way that's being checked as well to make sure that they still qualify? And I'll listen off the air.
All right, Scott. Thanks. Thanks for the call.
So I think those are both really good questions, and the answer is that this is all being done through the income tax system. So when you go and file your taxes at the end of the year and report what your income is, then the IRS is going to check your income against what you reported at the time that you got a subsidy, and if you perhaps your income went up and you got too much of a subsidy, then you're going to be expected to pay back the difference. And if your income went down and you got too little, then you may get a little bit of a discount on your taxes. And that is also the way in which people are going to be assessed this tax penalty. If they didn't have insurance, you're going to be expected as part of your income tax filing to tell the government whether or not you had health insurance during the year. And if the answer is no, then they're going to assess a penalty on you, and that may come out of your tax refund.
And when does that happen, this penalty? Is that at the end of this year, Margo, or next year?
So it's actually going to be next year because people are going to be filing their taxes for this year. So this whole year has to pass. People have to earn the money that they're going to earn. They're going to need to have the health insurance that they have. And then when they file their taxes for this year, then they will, you know, either get a refund or they will get a penalty.
And do we have any sense nationally, Enroll America wouldn't be doing this, but do we have any sense of how many people would prefer to pay the penalty?
I don't know if there have been good estimates on that. There clearly are some people who would prefer to pay the penalty, but I think probably overall the larger categories of people who have not gotten insurance are people who either just don't know about this, they don't realize that there are new options, or they don't realize that there may be financial assistance that makes it possible for them to afford it. Or there are people who have looked at the options and they've said, you know what, this health insurance is just too expensive. Or maybe like the last caller said, you know, it's expensive and it has a really high deductible and that just doesn't make financial sense for me, so I'll pay the penalty for that reason.
Mm-hmm. Jim in Rice Lake, hi.
Hi, my question is quite simple. The 10 million people that have enrolled through the Affordable Care Act, is that a gross number or is that a net number, including those that lost their insurance?
So that's a net number. So we have some more detailed numbers about the gross number of people that have enrolled. We know that, according to the federal government, about 7.3 million people have signed up for insurance in the marketplaces. And I may get this number slightly wrong, but somewhere in the neighborhood of 9 million new people have signed up for Medicaid and the Children's Health Insurance Program. Those are the government programs that provide health insurance to low-income people, 9 million more compared to last year. So if you add those two numbers together, you get a number that's larger than 10 million. And what that tells you is that some of the people who are signing up for these new programs were people who had insurance before through some other way, probably through work.
Mm-hmm. And thank you, Jim, very much for your call. Jim, another Jim in Westby. Hi.
Tim, actually.
Tim. But, hi, Tim.
My question is this. It has to do with a qualification for the Affordable Care Act. It's my understanding, of course, that if you work for a company that provides a qualified plan at work, that you're not eligible for coverage under the in the clearinghouse. But for instance, let's say you're a married couple and one of you works for a company that provides a qualified plan, but just for you. Can the rest of the family, like the other spouse and the children, get coverage under the Affordable Care Act? Or is that a gap in the coverage? Because I think there are many situations where businesses are trying to do the best they can. They provide a qualified plan, but just for their employee, not for their employee and family.
I think there are some circumstances in which people who get insurance through work, but their family can't get it, are going to fall through the cracks. I think it's a problem that's been discussed and that's been acknowledged. There are some particular circumstances around when that happens and doesn't happen that I'm just not clear enough on to give you firm advice about it. But yes, I think you have identified a real problem. And it doesn't mean that those family members can't go to the marketplace and buy plans. They're not completely barred from going there. But what the law does, it doesn't allow them to access the subsidies. So if the family doesn't earn a lot of money, then they may not be able to afford the premium for the additional coverage. If, on the other hand, the family has a very low income, it may be possible that those remaining family members would be eligible for Medicaid or for the Children's Health Insurance Program in their state, in which case they might be able to get coverage without paying any premium. So I think if you know someone who is in that situation, it's worth having them at least go through the process of trying to enroll and seeing what's possible.
Thanks, Jim, for the call. And what about the process of enrollment? We had heard that it's fairly complicated. Is it a complicated thing to maneuver, Marco, or not?
It really is, and it's complicated for a couple of reasons. So one is that obviously last year there were a lot of problems with the website, and when the website isn't working, it's hard to go and shop. So hopefully things will be better this year, but I think there are some indications that there may still be problems. There's kind of that category of sort of technical problems. The other thing is that there's a lot of information that you need to provide in order for the government to figure out what you're eligible for under these new programs. So you need to know what your income is, and you need to know the immigration status of all the members of your family, and on and on. And so that can be complicated. But beyond that, I think that there's a kind of more deep problem, which is it's actually really difficult to buy health insurance and shop for it. It's not a product that most Americans understand very well. I think even people who are experts in healthcare really struggle with this. There's a contributor to The Upshot where I work who is a health economist, and he wrote an article recently about how hard it was for him to choose a health insurance plan for his family, and this is his job. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
And there are all these questions about, people can look at what the premiums are, and they may be able to find the plan that's the most affordable, or they may be able to find a plan that is with a company that they've heard of, but they may not know whether their doctors are covered, whether their drugs are covered. And so I think if you want to be a really informed consumer in this market, you have to really understand what's going on, and you have to do a lot of research. And what we found last year is that a lot of people who bought plans in the new marketplaces, they didn't just go on and, you know, click a couple of buttons. It wasn't like an Amazon.com sort of transaction. That what they were doing is they actually were going to professionals who had been trained in how to make these kinds of decisions to get advice.
Let's go next to Jude in Madison. Hi, Jude.
Hello.
Hi.
Just to let you know, I'm a business owner, and my husband and I have health insurance on the open market, and it costs $425 a month right now. We have a $10,000 deductible. We do not have a pregnancy plan because I can no longer have children. We really, really like our plan, but now as of in January, it is going up to $1,400 a month for the same exact plan because we have to pay because our insurance is not compatible or compliant or something. So now we have to pay more. What can we do about that?
So what you're describing is a real problem. What happened is that the Affordable Care Act required that all the plans that were being sold were going to all have to cover a certain minimum number of benefits. So all of them, for example, have to cover prenatal care and pregnancy care. And as a result of that, a lot of plans that were on the market before only covered, you know, more limited things. And there are even more plans that existed that didn't even cover hospitalization or didn't cover any prescription drugs. Those kinds of plans are no longer allowed. And so all of the plans have to cover a minimum number of benefits. And what that means is that sometimes they're getting more expensive because they have to cover more different categories of service. My advice to you would be, the plan you had before was not one of these marketplace plans. It's called an off-marketplace plan. And so the replacement plan that you've been offered is also off the marketplace. And what that means is that you're not eligible for any kind of tax subsidy to help you pay that premium, which is going up by so much. And my advice would be to go into the marketplace this year and see what other options are available. In some markets, there really are quite a lot of choices. There's a lot of price competition. So it may be that even if you're eligible for no subsidy, there is another plan that you may like as well that is a lot cheaper. But depending on how much money you earn, it's also possible that you don't really have to pay that full premium. So even if it's as expensive as you were quoted, you may only end up having to pay a fraction of that out of your own pocket.
Does that strike you as a real huge increase, or would a lot of people be experiencing that, Margo, from $425 to $1,400?
I mean, there's no doubt that that is an enormous increase.
Right.
I would be getting some sticker shock myself if I got a letter like that in the mail. But I think that some of what the insurance companies are doing is they're really trying to encourage people to go to the marketplaces because that's where they want to sell business. And so they may not have big incentives to keep the premiums affordable in these older kinds of plans where there are fewer people who are remaining in them.
Thanks very much, Jude, and all the best to you. John in Green Bay, hi.
Hi, how you doing?
All right, John, how are you?
Good. Good, good. A little synopsis here. I've had health insurance, former business owner, all that stuff got crushed in the recession, and I'm a happy guy. But I'm 59 years old, and I was previously paying $330 a month out of my own pocket for a reasonably good policy. I went to the ACA, and I plugged in an income of $18,000 a year. I chose a policy that was now $505 a month with a $4,500 deductible. That was my maximum out-of-pocket also. With my subsidy, I pay a little under $60 a month, and I was capped at $1,250 deductible or maximum out-of-pocket. My previously policy, I'm 59, I could not go in for my colonoscopy because it was no longer preventative. It was diagnostic or something. Anyway, all this stuff. I had that done. I had carpal tunnel done. My hand's good. I've had my income verified to so that I'm not cheating on the system. And, yes, I in theory, if I was making $44,000 a year, I would have been subject to a bit of an increase on my monthly benefits, but I actually would be getting more for it. So I I don't want my health care going away. I'm insured by a private company here in Green Bay. I have the same doctors that I had before. I go to the same places. And I have obviously paid my deductible of $1,250, and I send in my monthly premiums. The government hasn't interfered with my life at all except for making it better. So that's just my comment.
That's your story. Thanks, John, for the call. Margo.
I think John's story is a really good example of why it is important for people who are shopping for insurance to make sure they do go to the marketplace and see what's available to them, because they may be surprised at how substantial the tax subsidies are depending on what their income is. And if their income is quite low, they may even be able to get Medicaid at no cost to them at all. So, you know, especially for those people who have those old plans, who are getting those scary letters that suddenly they're going to get a big bill increase, they may actually get a welcome surprise that, oh, I used to pay $400 and now I can get an equivalent plan for something like $60.
And when you talk about those old plans, what are you talking about? What are those plans?
Those are the plans. So before the Affordable Care Act marketplaces opened, there were, if you were an individual person and you wanted to buy your own health insurance, maybe if you were a small business owner or you were unemployed, there were plans that you could buy, but they weren't subject to all of the rules that the new plans are subject to, and there were no tax subsidies to help you. So they cost the same thing regardless of what your income was. And then, of course, in a lot of states, and I think Wisconsin was one of these, the insurers didn't have to cover you if you'd had a history of illness, or they might say, you know, we'll cover you but not for these conditions because we know that you might get sick. And they might have some of these other kinds of benefit limitations that I discussed before, like they might not include prescription drug coverage, they might not include maternity care, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
The new plans all have to cover this kind of package of minimum benefits.
I see.
They all have limitations on how much they can charge you out of pocket, and they have to take you. If you come in and you pay the premium, it doesn't matter if you've been sick in the past, you can't be discriminated against.
Mark in La Crosse, hi.
Yeah, I guess the gentleman that just called in and said he was 59, I'm 54. My example would be is that my wife and I have worked full-time our entire life. We make a decent income, middle-income earners, and basically we get our insurance through a health insurance through our employer, and basically we, same scenario as a lot of people have been calling in. In order for our premiums to even stay manageable, we got to go up to a $10,000 deductible. And it just seems to me is that if you take out, I granted some of the low income are benefiting from this, but the bottom line is it seems from my vantage point that if you're making a decent income, you're not going to get subsidized. You're going to have your insurance provided to you, but you're going to pay for it. And it's basically an expenditure that got put on the middle class to pay for this to go through. And the reality was, it didn't have overwhelming support when it got passed. The people that got elected because we had a downturn in the economy, and then they forced it down our throat. And the reason why we got the problems that we have today is because only one side of the parties wrote it. Nobody, half of them, didn't even read it, and we're dealing with all the consequences. And let's be honest, the middle class, if you're making decent money, you're not going to be subsidizing. You're going to pay huge amounts on your premium. You're going to pay high deductibles, and if you're a small business owner like an excavator or something, I've talked to those guys. Their premiums have gone through the roof because they've worked hard their lives. They make a decent income, but you're going to pay now.
But you're not on the Affordable Care Act, right, Mark?
No, but it's your employer insurance that got impacted by this.
All right. Is that true, Margo? Did it?
So it definitely is true that what we're seeing over time is that the premiums for employer plans have gotten higher over time, actually have been increasing by smaller rates over these last few years than what we've seen historically. But if you kind of look with a big sweep at, say, like the last 20 or 30 years, the premiums for employer plans have just gone up and up,
right,
and become very,
right,
they've really eaten into people's wage increases. And increasingly we see employers are asking people to pay more, both in the way of a higher share of the premiums out of their paycheck, but also the kind of high deductibles that the caller just described are becoming more and more common. Something like 42% of all employer plans now include a deductible that's more than $1,000, and that would have been unheard of just a few years ago. So the thing to realize is that the Affordable Care Act, the Congress people that wrote it, they really were concerned. They didn't want to create a lot of disruption for people who already had insurance, because even though the employer market has some problems, as we've just discussed, and it can be very expensive for people in general, people who have insurance through work are pretty happy with what they have. And so the law didn't have a lot of impact on that market. That market is sort of operating,
right,
not identically to how it did before, but very similarly to how it did before. And so, you know, people are definitely experiencing the kinds of things that our caller just described, but it's probably not the direct result of the law.
More phone calls in a moment. We're talking about the Affordable Care Act this hour, and Enroll America has been doing extensive survey of Americans in 11 states. Their mission is to enroll people in the Affordable Care Act, but also to get a sense of who the people are who have already enrolled the some 10 million people. Margot Sanger-Katz is the healthcare correspondent for The Upshot, which is New York Times website, writing about politics, policy, and everyday life. And they have written some interesting articles the last couple weeks examining who's been signing up. And we're talking about that this hour of the show. Here is our phone number, 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show. Twitter, @KDunnShow. A reminder, this is Election Day. And tonight at 8 o'clock, our state government reporter, Sean Johnson, and Wisconsin Public Television's Frederica Freiberg will be co-hosting our election night coverage. So you will get the latest election results as they roll in, and up-to-the-minute analysis on the races shaping the 2014 midterm elections. So that's coming up tonight at 8 o'clock right here. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Karen in Jefferson, our next caller. Hi, Karen.
Hello, Kathleen, and thank you for taking my call. Real quick, I'd like to respond to the gentleman who called just before you took my call. I would like to state that while I can't speak for anybody else, I can tell him that when I was working for employers who did offer insurance, inevitably, and long before the Affordable Care, before the Affordable Health Care Act was in place, my insurance premiums went up every year, my deductibles went up every year, and my paycheck got smaller because of this every year. So I don't believe that that has impacted my, or the Affordable Health Care Act has impacted employer or employee offered insurance over the years. I would have to argue that point with them. And the reason I called today was because every healthcare provider without exception that I have spoken to since this came into effect has told me that they have seen shorter lines in emergency rooms. And because they're spending less time with the emergency room patients, and fewer people in the emergency room, healthcare costs are slowly but surely diminishing. They're going down. So I believe that all in all, I think the Affordable Health Care Act in the long run is going to be extremely beneficial for one and all, because that gentleman who's paying X amount of dollars for his premium, I would think will be spending less money for, say, his pharmaceuticals, because perhaps the hospitals will be charging less money for a drug. That being said, my question to you is, to your guest is, why are there certain parties in our government and certain media outlets who perpetually downplay and denigrate and badmouth the Affordable Health Care Act? It is a good thing for the American people, and I simply don't understand why they have to pick on it, why there are certain members of our government, of our Congress, who have voted 58 times to repeal the law.
Well, and it's been controversial for a long, long time. Why don't you just take on the issue of why it is difficult to change a healthcare system that really nobody was very fond of? I mean, I've said this many times, but we had, when we were coming up to a change in healthcare, we had discussions with business owners and Republicans and Democrats, and everybody said the system is broken. We have to do something. And so when something is done, it's not what some people want. It's just a morass. It is really hard to get everybody behind something on this, Margo. Why?
I think the reason is, first of all, the healthcare system is extremely complicated, so making changes to it is hard. Even if the politics wasn't an issue, kind of coming up with an idea about what you would do that would take this very complicated, very expensive, and pretty unfair system and make it better. So I think that is one large impediment. But another, I think, important political reality to realize is that most people in America realize that there are problems with the health care system and would like it to be better in some abstract way. But if you ask them if they're satisfied with what they have, before this law passed, people were like generally pretty happy. You know, we have a large number of senior citizens who are covered by the Medicare program. They tend to be pretty happy. There is a large proportion of the American public that gets their insurance through their work, and some of them maybe aren't so happy about a high deductible or had some fight with their insurance company, but they feel pretty well protected. And then there's this minority of Americans who really were suffering under the old system and just didn't have access to health insurance because either because they had been sick in the past and they were being discriminated against, or because they were too poor to afford comprehensive insurance. And so any changes that you make that make the system better for those people who were left out before, you know, they potentially could make things worse for the rest of the public that's generally pretty happy. And so that creates a political situation in which I think it's hard to make change, because anything that you do that's disruptive is going to make a lot of people upset. And so, you know, what Congress tried to do with this law was find a way to make the system more accessible for people who struggled to find health insurance before, without making changes that were going to make it more difficult or more unpleasant for people who were basically happy with what they had before. And so you see that it's kind of complicated.
It is
complicated. a complicated system and layered more complications.
Exactly.
On it.
Yeah, we can't have it easy. We did want to bring into the conversation Erin Knott. She's the Enroll America. We started the conversation by talking about what Enroll America has been doing in terms of getting people to enroll and also giving us a sense of who the people are who have already signed up. She is the Enroll America Michigan State Director. Enroll America has staff on the ground in 11 states, and Michigan is one of them. Erin, thank you very much for joining us. Hi.
Hi, thanks for having me on.
Yeah, our great pleasure. So what did you find that may have surprised you when you started talking to people in Michigan who have already enrolled? Was there anything about the demographics that made you raise your eyebrows?
Well, I think one of the facts that we welcomed was the fact that of those that enrolled during the first enrollment period, 87% of those Michiganders qualified for financial assistance. And, you know, we know that 62% of those people found a plan for $100 or less. And so I think that that right there is just one of the highlights of the Affordable Care Act and the benefits that it has to consumers across the state of Michigan and across the country.
And what are you doing to reach out to people now? How are you getting the word out?
We have a two-pronged approach right now. You know, we kind of joke amongst our staff that we're walking and chewing gum at the same time, because there are those folks that need to, you know, either renew or, you know, take a look at their options during open enrollment too, as well as the folks that didn't take the opportunity the first time around. So we're talking to people about getting covered and staying covered. And we encourage folks that, you know, did purchase insurance during the first open enrollment period to go to the marketplace again so that they can update their information and to take a look at, you know, the new plans that will be made available to see if there's a better product out there for them. For the individuals that, for whatever reason, didn't participate, you know, we're continuing to drum home the message that financial assistance is available. We talk about real-life, you know, consumer success stories across the state, hoping to make that connection for folks that, yes, this is true, financial assistance is available. And we also talk to people about where they can go to find in-person assistance. We know that in-person assistance is critical for a lot of uninsured individuals. And so we help them kind of make that connection. We introduce them to those folks and help them, you know, schedule appointments, things like that.
And why are you only in 11 states?
We're in 11 states where, you know, statistically there's the highest number of uninsured, with a couple of exceptions. You know, California and the state of New York had their own kind of program similar to ours. So we're in states where, again, if you looked at the numbers of uninsured, Michigan kind of fell into the top tier states. And so that's where there's a field program and why we have folks on the ground here in Michigan.
Mm-hmm. And Margo, that's interesting what Erin said, that 87% of the people are getting some kind of financial assistance. That's a large number.
It's really in large part a reflection of who didn't have insurance before the Affordable Care Act provisions went into place. You know, people who tended to make higher incomes by and large were people who had the kinds of jobs that enabled them to get insurance through their work, and the people who were uninsured were people who tended to make lower incomes. And so it makes sense that a lot of them would be in the categories that would qualify for some kind of subsidy.
Mm-hmm. We have a ton of phone calls. Let's take a couple more. Charles in Oshkosh. Hi.
Hi, Kathleen. I'm glad I got on, because I have a positive story about the Affordable Care Act. And so often when we hear these discussions, everybody's complaining. So I'm self-employed. My daughter was diagnosed with type 1 diabetes when she was 2 years old, and she's 15 now. Until the Affordable Care Act, and this is a subject that hasn't come up at all today, is the pre-existing conditions. She was stuck on a health insurance policy that I originally purchased, started buying, in 1991. Because of her pre-existing condition, she was uninsurable on any other health insurance policy that I would purchase on the marketplace. When the Affordable Care Act went through, we got one of those letters because her old policy, of course, was no longer compliant. But the insurance company, which happened to be based in Wisconsin, directed us to another insurance company that was an alternative to going on the marketplace where we could buy insurance. And before the Affordable Care Act, I was paying $3,700 a quarter for her health insurance coverage, just for her coverage. The rest of the family was on an HSA policy. Now I'm paying $800 a quarter for better coverage. And, you know, it saved our family thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars. And I think a key element of the Affordable Care Act is the elimination of the pre-existing condition issue that really stuck a lot of people with chronic diseases like type 1 diabetes on an old policy that was getting more and more expensive because there was probably nobody left on that policy since 1991.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a positive side of all of this, and I just wanted to share that.
All right. Thank you so much, Charles. Aaron, would you like to respond to that?
Well, what Charles said is exactly right. We've seen that across the state. You know, consumers no longer have to worry about pre-existing conditions. And so there's that peace of mind for those that were in Charles's situation or people that didn't have insurance before but were worried about obtaining health coverage because, you know, they had asthma, because they had cancer, or something in their medical file from, you know, in their childhood. And so he's right. That is one of the benefits of the Affordable Care Act. You know, pre-existing conditions are a thing of the past. And there's numerous other consumer benefits that are part of this law as well.
Thank you, Charles. Time for maybe one more phone call. Jeff in Columbus. Hi.
Hello.
Hi, Jeff.
Hi. I'm curious. I'm 60 years old, and I'm thinking about retiring early. And does the Affordable Care Act consider only income, or do they consider your net worth?
I can answer that. So they really just are looking at your income, and so your net worth is not relevant. And so if you retired and you're earning a smaller income than you were before, that would be what would be considered.
All right, Jeff?
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear you.
They just consider your income, Jeff.
Just consider your income. Okay.
Yes, sir.
Thank you very much.
All right, thanks very much for the call. Aaron, do you think there's any way, we do hear from people, and Margo has talked about this some too, that this whole healthcare system is pretty difficult for most people to navigate. Is there anything that we can do about that? Certainly, we would have bipartisan agreement that this ought to be pretty simple, wouldn't we?
Well, I can tell you that, you know, the website, healthcare.gov, has made improvements even since the last open enrollment period. You know, last time around, it was 70 windows that consumers had to click through. Now we're at 16. But I think that the piece that's critical to folks' success is connecting them to in-person assistance, you know, where they live. And there are websites and resources, and we do a lot of publication, you know, out in communities across the state to make sure that people know where they can go to sit down and meet with somebody, you know, one-on-one, face-to-face, to kind of walk through the process, because it is complicated. If you've never had health insurance before, you probably have a lot of questions, the difference between coinsurance and, you know, premiums and things like that. That on top of actually, you know, walking through the enrollment process and selecting your plan. So, again, I think that the key element is guiding consumers to where they can go so that they can find somebody, you know, nearby within walking or driving distance to schedule an appointment or just to walk in and sit down and have that kind of face-to-face conversation.
Right.
And one opportunity would be going to our website at getcoveredamerica.org, we have a locator tool where people can put in their zip code and find somebody nearby to meet with.
All right. Thank you both so much for being with us. Margot, nice reporting. Thank you for being
Thanks for having us.
Margot Sanger-Katz, healthcare correspondent for The Upshot, New York Times website. Thanks to Aaron Knott, who's the Enroll America Michigan State Director, looking at what they've done to find out who has signed up and what groups are being reached and who is yet to be reached. Thanks to KP Whaley for this interesting program, and thanks to KP for on-air production here in our studios in downtown Milwaukee. A reminder, our election coverage starting tonight at 8 p.m. with our government reporter Sean Johnson and Wisconsin Public Television's Frederica Freiberg co-hosting election night coverage. Lots of interesting races, a lot of national attention focused on this state, and you'll get results and analysis at 8 o'clock this evening. News is coming up.